there are many different levels to awareness, many different levels to consciousness as well. We try to take you through the many different levels here on Truth Frequency. Sometimes we will discuss things on the first tier. Sometimes we'll discuss things on the second tier, third tier, so on and so forth. But every once in a while, we like to take you to the very edge of the universe, to the very edge of understanding. And that's why I'm so glad we have our next guest, Daniel Winter, on the line with us. It's been a while since we've had him on the show. And I have to admit, right off the bat, ladies and gentlemen, some of the things that Daniel gets into are even a little bit too advanced for myself. So I'm going to warn everybody to brace yourselves, strap yourselves in, and this is going to be a show that you're probably going to listen to over and over again and continue to get something new out of it every single time. Dan Winter's background is just as multifaceted as his viewpoints. Graduating with honors from the University of Detroit, Dan pursued graduate studies in psychophysiology and the origins of language. In addition to his academic background, he worked as a systems analyst with IBM, an industrial metallurgist, and crystallographer. He has undertaken many diverse studies from quantum physics to modeling at the MIT Space Lab. Through the years, Dan has lectured on the evolution of consciousness, sacred geometry, and coherent emotion at many national and international conferences. His website is fractalfield.com, goldenmean.info, and theimploder.com. I've been looking forward to this broadcast ever since we scheduled Dan to come back on the show. Dan, how are you doing, sir?
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Good morning. Nice to have you back for sure. I don't even know where to begin. So, other than the background that I read, just for people that aren't too familiar with you, give us a little more detail or a little more depth into your background.
Well, you know, I was known for teaching sacred geometry internationally and then with Roger Green, the science of feng shui. And recently, we've really become involved in mediating breakthrough technologies with the group BreakthroughTechnologies.com and BloomTheDesert.com. Currently, we're involved in cold plasma research and zero-point energy research and esoteric physics, and there's all kinds of fun stuff happening, actually, and I'm happy to be here.
Excellent. You mentioned zero-point energy research. Have you borrowed from Tesla's research or expanded upon any of it?
Yeah, we think we understand what he was doing with energy transmission without wires quite a bit better. Most of it has to do with what we call phase conjugation, which is basically a geometry of wave interference that produces what's called longitudinal waves, which is perhaps a better term than the term scalar. And these are the waves that kind of go through anything superluminal faster than light, and they're clearly the mechanism of a lot of spiritual things and mitogenic radiation, DNA radio, all kinds of fun stuff.
Faster than light. Mm-hmm. It seems like fiber optics is the go-to technology at this point if you want to deliver information at light speed. I mean, that's basically what it's doing. But faster than light, I can see how this technology could really surpass anything that we've ever seen before. However, I do want to ask you about the potential health effects that it can have on the human body, because as we know right now, Wi-Fi, for instance, we're bathing in it, and a lot of people are having some adverse effects to it. Nothing that can be proven directly. However, when you take a plant, for instance, and put it next to a Wi-Fi router, that plant will start to die.
Yeah, we believe that that electromagnetics is very sympathetic to biology in general, but the frequency choice is the problem. And that there is a certain set of frequencies. I think we could call them the truth frequencies, which determine whether a field effect is bioactive or detrimental to life. And that is what we think we've broken through on. It's called a phase conjugate array, which it starts with the very basic science, which is the core of my new book at fractalfield.com. There's an equation on the cover. And that equation is specifically Planck length or Planck time, the universal fundamental frequency, musical fundamental of all of physics. It's a wave length and time into which every wave that physics has ever measured will divide evenly. It's sort of physics universally agreed most core frequency, Planck length and Planck time. Now, if you take that unit of length, it's about 1.618 times 10 to the minus 33 centimeters with a corresponding unit of time, and you multiply by exponents or powers of exact whole number multiples of golden mean ratio, which we've determined optimizes what's called phase conjugation or constructive interference, you get a set of frequencies which we'll call the truth frequency. And that is on the cover of the new book at fractalfield.com. And that harmonic series predicts exactly the frequencies of, or very close to exactly the frequencies of the Schumann harmonic series of the planet, of the frequencies of brain waves you see during bliss and peak perception. It predicts almost exactly the two frequencies that are photosynthesis, and it predicts exactly, almost exactly the frequency of the Earth year and the Venus year, which is to say everything which is negentropic and self-organizing. So if we broadcast our information on that radio, the real mitogenic radio, which I call the origin of negentropy, you get self-organization. Negentropy means the opposite of chaos. And that's the frequency signature we're using for this priori device, which produces a rejuvenation field, a bioactive field, what the ancients called the Shem. So we do know how to fix electromagnetic pollution.
I do have to ask, though, can the opposite effect be used in some kind of harnessed through technology? And if so, could they be using that on the planet right now?
Could the opposite effect, I'm sorry?
Yes, yeah. Could they create a chaotic type of signal that inherently makes people sick, makes people depressed, it brings on negative states of brain waves as opposed to states of bliss?
Well, yes, of course, mood control is possible. Many friends have played with that, and it corresponds to the physics of emotion. So we know the frequency ratio of love and joy, but we also know the frequency ratio of anger. It's literally destructive interference. So everything that is positive, of course, could be negative. But we're looking to see that we can't avoid using these technologies. We just must use them responsibly.
Of course, of course. Are you familiar with Dr. Koren's God helmet?
No, I don't think so.
It was a helmet that was developed which sends electromagnetic waves to the brain. And once a subject was placed with this helmet on, they reported experiences of presence in the room, angels in the room, some extraterrestrial encounters and abductions. And all this was done by manipulating the brain waves of the subjects through the use of these electromagnetic frequencies. So it makes me wonder if they can actually project a hallucination into people's minds by using these type of frequencies.
Well, the answer is yes, of course, it is absolutely possible. The core is to understand the deep physics of mind and spirit, which we now believe quite clearly relates to this phenomena in wave mechanics called phase conjugation. And let me explain very briefly. First of all, we discovered that during peak perception, you know, God experiences, as you say, there's a very particular frequency recipe that occurs in the brainwave. The alpha to the beta harmonics enter what's called the golden mean ratio. Most of your viewers know what that is, 0.618033989 is that ratio. And that harmonic cascade determines what's called optimized constructive interference, and that means waves converge in such a way that they implode, that they create negentropy.
Yeah, I hate to cut you off, Dan, but we have a hard break hitting us. I'm going to pause right there, and we will pick it up right on the other side. Don't go anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. Phase conjugation is a physical transformation of a wave field where the resulting field has a reversed propagation direction but keeps its amplitudes and phases. Now, we're speaking with Daniel Winter, who's breaking down phase conjugation for us. And Daniel, I'm sure you can speak much more extensively than I can. So please take us away. We have about 10 minutes in this segment.
Well, great. I mean, the core issue here is what is producing consciousness. And let's understand that musically, harmonically, frequency-wise. Again, the truth frequency. So years back when I was working with Professor Karatkov in Russia, he had been working with what was called the World Without Blindness Project. And he'd been measuring the frequencies of brain waves for kids who were able to see without their eyes. You can see lots of films on the web of kids with blindfolded, and they're able to see it quite clear. And even in Mexico, there's all kinds of stories about that. Point being that one of the things he measured was the frequencies of the brain waves. And he discovered that the alpha, beta, the around the 8 hertz and above, entered into golden mean ratio. Now, I had been studying the geometry for years. You know, we have a kit to build this nest called the Star Mother. And we realized that the brain waves were creating what's called optimized constructive interference, which is what golden ratio does. And we wrote a bunch of equations and mathematics on this. If people are interested in the details, fractalfield.com/mathematics of fusion. And what we proved was that the golden mean ratio is the optimized form of constructive wave interference, and therefore what's called conjugation of phases. Now, what we mean by that is so easy to visualize. It's kind of fun. If you visualize the ancient caduceus of Hermes, this is a very hermetic conversation, you get the picture of phase conjugation, constructive interference. And in 3 dimensions, the way to visualize what's happening with the waves in the brain or in anything that's conjugating is you visualize 2 pine cones learning to kiss noses, you know, vortex. And that's the geometry of conjugating phases. And so in optics, for example, phase conjugation is the only way physics has ever measured self-organization, negentropy, and also time reversal, by the way. And we know what that means and what it does. It means basically at the center of your brain, you got this plasma field that's converging in such a way like screws that are very concise to create implosion, centripetal compression. And so this begins to sort waves into phase negentropically, and this is called consciousness. Now, there's a lot more to it. It turns out that the right and left hemisphere have to be 180 degrees out of phase while it's happening, and that creates what's called longitudinal waves. And that's how Ingo Swann, for example, heats a thermistor at a distance with his mind, because that longitudinal wave goes through just about anything. It's the holy grail of plasma containment. There's a lot to this. But basically, your brain is imploding, and that's what's creating the phenomenon of consciousness. And once you begin to understand that, it's what's holding your aura together. It's what makes cold plasma work. It's all kinds of great physics.
Wow. Wow. So you said time reversal. Can you expand a little bit on that?
Well, when physics says time reversal, you know, it sounds highly esoteric, but if you really look at it, what they generally mean is return to order. For example, in physics, you can time reverse rusted steel back to unrusted steel, but you cannot do the reverse. So when we make a self-organizing or rejuvenation field, which our Priori device does, the form of time reversal is that you can take certain things backward in time only if you're going to increased order, and that's very important. It's what in the Bible they meant when they said, "I will raise a Shem unto the Lord," and in that was translated, "I will make an altar to God." Now, in fact, Shem, which is the origin word, chemistry, alchemy, and schematic, Shem. Zachariah Sitchin spent years on the word and finally decided to call it Hayward Firestone. And what he means is implosive capacitor to make bioactive field. And that's the definition of what it is to be an altar in church. And that creates this rejuvenation field, which is time reversing.
I see. So can this be applied, I guess, to the human body for regeneration?
We have been having success. We had success with melanoma. We had success with major infection, other things, and we're having clinical trials. It appears, yes, that absolutely, once you understand what a rejuvenation field is, what you can understand the physics of what a bioactive field is. And this is central to my life's work. In fact, this is my life's work, is to teach the physics of and to create bioactive fields. And that is what TheImploder.com is. It's imploding for agricultural water, TheImploder.com. It is what Purify.com is, P-Y-R-A-P-H-I, Purify.com, where we do it capacitively. That's what the ancient Shem was. And this is what the Priori device was, which the French government proved healed thousands of cases of cancer, but no one knew why the frequency signature worked, and I wrote the equation. And now we have a successful prototype. The location is confidential, but we actually have a cold fire plasma fusion, cold plasma And it's straight out of Star Trek. You see this fiery plasma. You see the beginnings of the pictures at fractalfield.com. And yes, it's absolutely a healing field effect. It's very important to know what is a living electric field. Absolutely.
Wow. That is fascinating. Can you shed a little light on how some of these experiments take place? How do they progress from beginning to end?
Well, using the Priory device as an example, and you can see all the literature there. Actually, the detailed literature is at the website for the new book, fractalfield.com/fractalspacetime. And let me explain very briefly. A lot of physicists believe that fractality is the cause of gravity now. It's actually becoming the in thing to think about. But I'm the first one to write the equation. And what we now know is, again, if you look at the cover of my book, the Planck length in time times powers of golden ratio produces a frequency series, which, in addition to everything above that I talked about, is the geometry of hydrogen. And I was the one to prove it. The radii of hydrogen are, in fact, exponents of golden ratio times Planck. So the structure of hydrogen is a three-dimensional fractal. And that's the point here. That's what we're making, a fractal field, hence the title of the website. And it creates a centripetal force, implosion, and negentropy. So when I discovered that my equation predicted the frequencies Priory used, and also the frequencies Elizabeth Rauscher used to eliminate pain, we built a more sophisticated version of the Priory device. It uses what's called broad spectral phase conjugation. And let me explain. In medicine, it is proven that the more frequencies that are included in your heart, the more immune system you have. That is a fact of medicine. goldenmean.info/holarchy. And that's Irving Dardick's work. So basically what that says is when a doctor measures your heart, the frequency harmonics contain the heart rate variability, HRV, the harmonic inclusiveness determines whether your immune system is alive or dead. It statistically predicts how long you're going to live. Actually, what's really cool is harmonic inclusiveness predicts the lifetime of anything.
Wow. Hold right there. Don't go away. We will pick it. Daniel, I have to say that it seems like you are really cracking the code to what consciousness is all about. And I would say that consciousness is nothing more than frequencies. Literally everything is vibrating at a certain frequency. That's what makes objects solid, for instance, the way that they're vibrating. And so when you take that down to the molecular level, you can actually tap into, at least from your experiments, you can tap into how the body actually works and start to correct things within the body. But let me ask you this before we go any further. Is it possible, and I think this is what they're doing with CERN, trying to find the God particle, but is it possible to create a frequency which can actually manifest matter?
Absolutely, and that's where we're getting with this conversation. A practical example would be the Keshe's groups work in cold plasma there, that they're actually precipitating matter out of light, and that's what I was about to explain. the concept is that, see, you asked me how these experiments proceed. And what I'm basically explaining is how a field effect of charge called cold plasma becomes centripetal and therefore precipitate the true physics of magic and alchemy. And that's the implosive point that's precipitating inertia or charge out of the air. You see, the essential physics here, the universe is comprised of a single contiguous compressible media, which had been called the ether. But we now know actually that is charge, the centripetal and centrifugal or compression and rarefaction of the vacuum. And that compression phenomena becomes negentropic and centripetal, which is to say implosive under certain geometric conditions called phase conjugation optimized by golden ratio, basically vortex converging and nesting perfectly. And this is what holds atoms together, which I proved because the golden ratio radii of hydrogen, for example, and is the cause of gravity. It is why objects fall to the ground, and it is why life exists. This is what my book is about. Phase conjugation is the origin of all biologic negentropy. Now, to answer your question earlier about how these experiments proceed, we make a cold plasma field that is implosive. It is literally a cold fire, a flame that does not consume. you'll see the picture on the cover there, fractalfield.com, where of the Prairie device. We have two plasma tubes. Noble gases are noble because they're fractal, neon, argon, etc., as is the platinum group metals. They're conjugators. And so the noble gas is then triggered with this magical frequency recipe, both high frequency and low, and that's the secret of our electronics, that does massive broad spectral phase conjugation, what I was calling harmonic inclusiveness. And you can actually play with that in an iPhone app for your heart rate, HRV, by doing these tricks with your breath to make it them implosive or like a caduceus, at heartsring.com, which is my iPhone app to teach this and also teaches heart coherence and empathy and breath control, yoga breath control. And we apply that whole frequency recipe in broad spectral conjugation, and we make this gap between the two plasma tubes in which you experience a cold fire in implosive plasma, and that is rejuvenation, that is time reversal, and that is how you precipitate matter of light. Because it's simple. Matter is a name for the inertia charge stores when it rotates. And obviously those rotations cannot be continued or centripetal unless they're constructive wave interference, which is optimized by golden ratio. So these caduceuses meet, they implode, and they make this centripetal force at the center. And that's the magic.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. So how far away are we until we can actually achieve this and use this on a mass scale? Because this is a game changer here.
You know, after many trips to Cachet's lab and others and working with scientists around the world, working with conjugation and longitudinals, my conviction is that we're already there. We're doing it. Our limitation is education. That's why I'm here, because this technology cannot be used until people come out of the dark ages and understand the physics a little bit. Otherwise, they're so confused they're walking around talking about miracles and personality worship instead of focusing on the science. So my conviction is the limitation is not the technology. It is the ability to educate.
I've talked about this before, and this phenomenon that we seem to be having, where we're being bombarded by GMOs, vaccines, and all kinds of poisons, while at the same time being distracted by everything that you just mentioned. While at the same time we have access to this information, we have access to information that can raise our consciousness, help us heal the body, avoid all of these poisons, and this is really a eugenics operation at its finest, and it's the individual that's making their own choice on whether they can survive or not. So people are definitely being distracted. It's by design. But I'm so glad that we have people like you who are putting all this information out there, because I do have high hope for the future. But I think we have to see this separation in humanity, the ones that fall and the ones that rise. And the ones that rise are the ones that are receptive to this type of info.
Yeah, and I think we're in agreement here, but it is very easy also to fall into the conspiracy theory sort of view of this. And again, I think the solution is education, because even our ancestors, we call the Nephilim the fallen and we call the Draco evil, but actually it's mostly because we have amnesia. We don't have the long-term memory, which is also what they lost, to understand even the blood chemistry. Those ancestors, Anunnaki, Nephilim, whatever you want to call them, the Draco, the Uru, Uras is what entered partial. They were nitrogen breathers. They had carbon bone and silicon nerves, and they breathed out cyanogen, and they benefited from radioactivity. So on a whole string of planets, you can kind of tell who's winning. If the oxygen is going down and the radioactivity is going up, you know who's winning. But the physics is that we need to understand what actually increases our life force electrically, and then we can make intelligent hygiene solutions, and then you get to what's called bliss, which is merely plasma propagation.
I'm actually really relieved to hear you say these things
too.
Because I've had the feeling and I've had the hypothesis that everything that we're experiencing, Fukushima, chemtrails, all of this is actually terraforming for a different species.
Yes, exactly. And until we learn the chemistry, we're walking around ignorant. The chemistry is that when they arrived at the planet, Enki's family, they came from Pleiades at the time, Uras, Ages of Uras. I recommend Anton Parks on this, his book, Secret of the Dark Stars, for example. They said, oh, we're beginning to age catastrophically. You can read it in the Sumerian. So they had to fabricate a bioactive field, which was their age reverser. And that's the whole Shem science. It's all over the Bible. It's what the Ark of the Covenant was, among other things. It reduced radioactivity by being implosive capacitance. So their ability to maintain their lifestyle required just exactly what you're calling terraforming. And if we understand the physics, we can actually understand the origin of for example, kosher in the Jewish tradition. Kosher is a Draco saying, if there's blood in my meat, the water in that blood is poisonous to my blood, which is actually an oil. So Yahweh and Lil, his blood was a lipid, an oil, which is on those planets. In fact, there's a headline news today about planets that are like that and life is still possible. And so water and oxygen are a poison to them. So, for example, if you think you have plasma parasites in your Senate, you know, your congressmen are inhabited by da-da-da, all you have to do is pump in oxygen, actually. But there's a whole story to this, and people don't know the story, so, of course, they're stuck.
Wow.
Well, and doesn't carbon dioxide, the thing that the UN is trying to fight against, doesn't that create more oxygen through the greenhouse effect?
It's true. The issue is not carbon dioxide so much as centripetal force. So what's holding the atmosphere on the planet, or what's threatening the atmosphere on the planet, is not carbon dioxide directly. What's threatening the atmosphere is the loss of the negentropy and centripetal force of Gaia herself. The physics is quite simple. We wrote about this in an article called Fractality, Not Carbon. Basically,
you know what? Let's pick it up in just a moment, Daniel. This is getting really, really interesting. Don't go anywhere. Daniel, before we get any further, please give people the websites one more time and point them to any of your work that you recommend that they begin with, or some of the latest as well.
And Fractal Field, that's fractalfield.com, on top is my new book. And the main index of articles is at goldenmean.info. And basically, the core physics is this Planck harmonic series called Conjugate, which is the origin of every negentropic system, the origin of life, and literally a fractal in the sense that golden ratio establishes a three-dimensional fractal pattern for waves called phase conjugation, which implodes at center and creates life and self-organization. What we were just about to begin to talk about there was the problem of atmosphere, question about oxygen there. And basically what I was explaining was that the harmonic series, which is the Schumann harmonic. If you look at the literature, the actual Schumann harmonic frequencies is a cascade, and I did the calculations, it's on the cover of my book, and proved that the Schumann harmonic series is what's called a negentropic pump wave. It's phase conjugate. It's implosive. In other words, the planet is trying to get implosive, negentropic, self-organizing. And that's why, for example, the Gaia hypothesis works. The planet is self-regulating only to the extent that it's implosive, phase conjugate, and negentropic. So we can fix it. You can actually take atmosphere and restore it by restoring the harmonic series of Schumann to precision, which is what Prairie did, for example. And you can restore negentropy to environments. A practical example.
If you have a city that's full of metal and electrosmog and pollution, it's opposite to conjugate, and therefore it repels rainfall. It prevents compression. It prevents extra precipitation. Whereas if you take an environment and you put in labyrinths and stone circles and you fix the magnetic field to make it more conjugate and fractal, suddenly you attract rainfall. So this is an example that we can fix our atmosphere if we understand what makes it self-organizing.
Now, you mentioned the Anunnaki, and you mentioned them with quite a bit of certainty. And hearing a scientist speak about these things is great, because I've always felt that these myths, for lack of a better term, are true, and this is our true occulted history. But hearing somebody of your stature talk about this, it really is reassuring to me. So let me ask you this. You mentioned a different author about the Anunnaki bloodlines, or the Dark Stars author. How accurate would you say Zechariah Sitchin's work is?
Well, stepping back a little bit, you know, Sitchin wrote a book on the life of Enki, which was poetic, but not very much history. But it's interesting that both Anton Parks, who's the author I referred to, and myself, both had intense Kundalini experiences, and still do sometimes. And the result was the same. We both end up writing a book about Enki. So why is it that when you have intense Kundalini experience, you get this plasma implosion, and suddenly you're writing books about Enki? Because there was a certain turning point in our civilization, at which point the plasma really reached a pivotal branch point. And it had to do with Enki's genetic experiments, obviously. So, you know, my book about Enki, goldenmean.info/Enki, you know, I taught about the ET history for many years, but then when I met Anton Parks, which we just recently worked with him in a conference in Paris here, and you know, he really, I think he got the history much more accurately, in my opinion, particularly in the early books, Secret of the Dark Stars, and the book about Eden. And what I think happened, and what he describes, is that we joke that he downloaded Enki's iPhone. what that is they had what's called a Girku, Silmarion, a fire crystal, Tuoi stone, many names for this. And it was a phase conjugate dielectric capacitor, a crystal which functioned as their kind of communication data storage and weapon. And we now know a lot about how these things work. But when you have intense bliss experiences, you go back to the nexus of plasma fusion, and that is where the memory radiates from. So Anton Parks, I got a lot that is right. I recommend PahanaBooks.com, I believe is the English version of his books, but also AntonParks.com. And he says that Zechariah Sitchin really screwed up. Actually, in his opinion, Zechariah Sitchin never even read, much less translated, the Sumerian hardly. But I mean, I actually think Zechariah Sitchin told some great stories, but he didn't get to the level of detail. One example I give is my friend George Merkel, the doctor who determined that the Sumerian glyph structure was waveguides for creating biology out of light, called the Sumerian elixir, which turns out to be the geometry of subcellular mitochondria and organelles. Anyway, there's a lot to the physics of the origin of these Sumerian culture.
Absolutely fascinating. And let me ask you this: in your insight and research into all of this, has there been any sign of a return date, or are they currently present with us now?
Well, you know, the intent of a species doing interventionism is how the British treated the Indians, and it's how the English treated Australian Aboriginals. That's how the Draco Anunnaki treated the indigenous monkeys and humans. It's Groundhog Day, you know.
Yes.
On the return? No, of course they're here, and originally Takadama, which is their word for Adam and Eve, Tak meaning Orion, Adama meaning Adam and Eve, the humans were snack food and slaves. That's all they were for. But Enki, on the other hand, he he had a dream, you know, which was that his genetic experiments would create this beautiful vaccine for the Orion Wars, which is what we are functionally. And, you know, if we could become plasma projective and psychokinetic, for example, he gave us too much sex juice. He over testosteroned our species specifically, intentionally, so that we would become less easy to dominate. And in that respect, he probably succeeded. And, you know, there's all kinds of stories about that. So, no, I mean, I think we have the capability to do something. And it's a turning point, but we only when we realize that we have to become plasma projective. One way to put that very simply is one good psychokinetic shaman is absolutely a whole lot more valuable than George Bush's entire military budget.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And if you look at humans, we are the only species on Earth that has a gene for brain size and has the ability to actually grow our brains bigger and bigger, you know, with really no limit.
Well, that's a good introduction. But what that is an introduction to is the fact that the actual definition of success is to grow your aura, and the size of the brain isn't only an introduction to the ability to grow your aura, which is where the Egyptian word fa'atun, which is the root of our term to fatten, which means to feed the aura. It's sort of Celestine Prophecy 101, which says all human interaction is about charge, what you eat and who you kiss. You're looking to attract charge. And what that means is simply you don't grow up unless you get an aura big enough to steer a star.
An aura big enough to steer a star. You know, that reminds me of something that Seven Bomar, one of our guests that we had on a couple of months ago, he said the same thing, that humans are the only species really that's capable of taking on all of the archetypes and all of the archetypal energies of the planetary spheres.
But this must be understood as physics. It is the later book, Anton Parks, called Secret of the Dark Stars, which is the fact that our ancestors, the high dragon queens, as it were, in fact, their ancestral memory inhabits and steers the dark stars, the black holes, whatever you want to call them. And the physics can be proven in the one sense that 11 times it was measured, there was a dramatic change in the solar flares when more than a million children sang the same song at once. We know the physics. The fact is stars do not grow up gene pools arbitrarily. They need them. What they need them for is to make the centripetal force that holds them together. But if you interview the solar shamans who see through the eye of the sun like it's an eyeball, you see what's happening.
Wow.
Wow.
Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. Coming up, hour number three, and we have two long uninterrupted segments in hour number three. So you definitely don't want to miss this because this is opening so many doors. And I also want to get into Saturn as well. How does Saturn play into all of this and the worship of Saturn? Is Saturn a star that will ultimately be formed one day that comes out of the series 2001 Space Odyssey? It's in the later parts of the book, but don't go anywhere. Hour number three coming up. Everybody on the Genesis Communications Network, you have to go to truthfrequencyradio.com and get the archive to get hour number three. But everybody listening live this evening, stay tuned. We'll be right back. You don't want to miss this. We're right here on Truth Frequency. Now we are going to go way beyond the realms of consciousness and dive right into the core of the matter. And Daniel, let me just make sure that I understand this correctly. So according to these theories or ideas, we power the sun. We keep everything moving.
Well, the heart of the sun, seen clairvoyantly, called Anu, has the same geometry of the slipknot, seven spins, five spins, which is at the heart of hydrogen, the heart of the humans. The human heart's geometry is the same, which means it's a centripetal slipknot of plasma. And you do not grow up in the sense of project your plasma out of here unless you go through the heart of the sun called Anu, which is the name of those ancestors. That's clear. But basically, the physics would be that your plasma field begins growing. And even when Benthoff, he was wiggling the planet during Kundalini. And eventually, that plasma field becomes projectable, the definition of the term Shem-An, shaman. And that plasma field then is centripetal, for example, at death. When Tibetans make rainbows, when they die, they become centripetal. And eventually, it gets up inertia to travel like a slingshot through the heart of a star, in this case our sun, and that's called growing up, and that's how you get out of kindergarten. Otherwise, you're stuck, basically.
Okay, okay. Now, where does Saturn play into all of this? I don't know if you can speak on this, but there seems to be a worship of Saturn. There's a hexagon on Saturn as well, and some people are looking to Saturn as if it has the opposite effect on us that we have on the sun. Rather than energizing it, Saturn seems to be sucking our energy force dry.
Well, we can say a little bit about it. We know that the Kaaba, the black cube of Mecca, is called the black cube of Saturn. And we know that if you look at the orbital dynamics, for example, you find some planetary orbitals are more conjugate than others. For example, the precise golden ratio exponent of Planck time, which is the time of the orbital time of Earth and Venus. And Venus is getting brighter, and that's the whole climax of Anton Park's work, is that OSIRIS is actually returning into the orbit of Venus. And what that means is the plasma field is inhabitable, whereas Saturn, if you look at the planetary geometrics, is not so conjugate. Now, if you go into the center of the black cube of Mecca, the black cube of Saturn, as it's called, there's actually three white statues in there which are feminine. It's Venus, actually, inside. But the physics is even more interesting, that the original meteor, it was a glass meteorite called the Lucifer Stone, which forms the Kaaba Stone of Mecca. And it is a phase conjugate dielectric. It was ground up, for example, about half of its volume was lost when the meteorite was owned by the mad caliph. And that was used to be the Philosopher's Stone. That was a projective powder of alchemy, because a little bit of that white powder, and you put it around a wax encrusted size of a grain of rice into the red hot mercury, and you actually implodes the mercury, and you get gold. It was the purest gold that the Royal Society of Britain had ever measured when John Dee and Kelly made it. But the point is that when you rotate around that conjugate dielectric, let me explain. A glass meteorite, when it's arriving, the only metal that survives the heat is the platinum group metals. So if you propagate that gold in a vapor through the sponge geometry of the molten glass, the way the Templars made the red glass, for example, it creates a sponge geometry which is called a phase conjugate, which means implosive. You can visualize the charge pass like that screw of pine cones kissing noses. And that's the electricity of the Kaaba Stone. So when you rotate a conjugator, you fabricate a gravitational field. It is the real physics of propulsion, fractalfield.com/propulsion. So there's actually a measurable change in the gravity field where the millions of people rotate around the black cube of Saturn in Mecca.
I don't even know what to say at this point. This is very, very in-depth information that we're going over. So what is the purpose? Well, let me ask you this. You mentioned the Lucifer Stone. Is that the term that you used?
Yeah, Lucifer was basically Enki.
Okay.
He was famous for understanding how to use that crystal tech.
Good. I think we're on the same page as far as that goes. And we seem to have the Judaic Christian order, for instance, who demonizes Lucifer, but again, worships Yahweh, and who is Enlil, as you said earlier. I agree with that whole analysis as well. What is the purpose of this struggle? What is the purpose of this rivalry between these sects, the people that follow Yahweh, for instance? Why do they demonize with such fervor this type of enlightening information?
Well, it's sort of old news. Whoever has the budget wins the PR wars. And for public relations, actually, it's Gurdjieff, you know, Beelzebub's tales. And Lil's name for Enki was Bo, as in Bohemia, and became Arcadia et in Arcadia Ego, which is the bloodline of the Hermetic through Greece into Eastern Canada. And so that bloodline was basically the remnant of the blood of Enki and Hermes, his science officer. Hermes was called Thoth Tehute. Dawid is the Hebraic name. The line of David always means Thoth. And Thothmoses is the name of the royal line of Egypt. And Thoth was a real person, as Antoine Gigal proved. And so the royal line of Egypt was literally the descendants of Thoth Hermes. When you see Akhenaten, he had this assignment from the Syrians, which was to build a plasma projector where a group could have bliss together and project themselves into the stars, which is what the Amarna temple was. And he didn't finish because he screwed up the checkbook. And he ran for his life from the bankers, changed his name to Moses, and founded the Essenes with the money from the Ark of the Covenant, making gold powder. And even Lawrence Gardner worked that all out in the Sacred Ark. So it's another example of the science officer, Thoth Hermes, understanding Caduceus phase conjugates and how that precipitates being the motor of most of religious history.
Wow. This is confirmation over and over and over again. We've been talking about these very ideas, but the way that you're breaking them down in depth, it makes me believe that we're definitely onto something here. So since we're speaking about frequencies, how do the pyramids play into all of this and all of these ancient structures? Are these frequency-based structures to manipulate some of these frequencies that we're discussing?
Well, remember, when you conjugate phases, which pyramid does, it does it dielectrically and magnetically. It's called a gravity diode, which you can see an example of the bioactive result. We accelerate fermentation rate by 40% every time, purify.com. When you make a conjugate field, you make it implosive. You implode the plasma, implode the charge. And that's why a pyramid sharpens razor blades and preserves meat, because it's centripetal dielectrically. And this was central, not just to the Anunnaki Draco requirement, which was, artificial prevention of aging, which they were very good at, but also because basically, all the advanced beings, they don't really travel so much in heavy metal. They're from the wrong end of the tracks if they do. No, they travel in plasma projection. And that's what the pyramid was for, why the tubes pointed to the right star at the right time, was because he could shoot your plasma like a squirt gun, and that was essential. That's what they called Dirana, or Stargate, read Anton Parks. And there were always a war over the Dirana, the Stargate. For example, Uru Asa LM, otherwise called Jerusalem. Uru means Draco or dragon blood. It's not always the bad guys. It's the dragon ancestor. Asa means queen of. L means the place of the phase shift, which is translation of vorticity, which is a plasma projection, which is called Stargate. And the war over the Stargate is simple. It's appropriate that you have to get to the Stargate, get your plasma projected back into stars, or you are stranded. But the problem is the Stargate's broken, so cancel a war.
Wow. So the sacred sites, the Dome on the Rock, for instance, do these have these type of significance as well?
Yeah, well, if you look at purify.com, you'll see a gold-coated dome, which is the White House, also Congress. But this is called a phase conjugator. And you can create an electric field that makes life, but doesn't just make life. It creates the possibility of plasma projection, the very definition of shamanism, and therefore the ability to project your aura, which is the origin, the beginning of becoming actually, Ophanim, Winged One, Archon, all of the advanced beings. So they're plasma projectors. So you need to understand, there's a famous story about, I think it was Thomas Jefferson, he could hear anything across the Senate or the Congress because he was in a place where the echo focused. Well, it's not just about the focusing of the acoustic, it's about the focusing of the dielectric. It's the definition of sacred space, what Castaneda called place of power.
The place of power.
The place of power. Wow.
Wow. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Well, we define biologic architecture by instructing you to fire your biology and architecture teacher if they did not know why an egg created a voltage end to end. You can measure 4 to 12 millivolts. That's called life. So once you know how to make life with structure, which is to centripetal electric, then you can be a biologist and architect. Until then, you should not get a paycheck. And that biologic architecture curriculum has gone global. goldenmean.info/architecture. We have people all over the planet teaching biologic architecture upon this new physics, which I invented. Well, at least I was the first electrical engineer to describe it. And basically, it's simple. If you look at the place in the room which you experience as sacred or powerful, where the spirals converge, it's not just phonon, it's not just sound, it's the electric field where it's centripetal. And that's where you get leverage on the plasma and steer the space It's the beginning of tornado steering. So basically, here's how you decide if your architect gets a paycheck. It's very simple. He builds a building. There's three ways to measure in the center whether or not the electric field of that building will cause a seed to grow. And it's all at the website. It's capacitive. You measure whether the field is central field. And so if the field created by that building causes life, then your architect gets a paycheck. And that now has gone global. People on the planet are starting to get it.
Wow. So I'm just having to process this.
Yeah, me too.
For just a moment. Because
look at it very simply. If your children are going to a building for a school that's full of steel and aluminum and electrosmog, it's destroying what you call their soul because their capacitance cannot breathe.
Right.
If, however, these children are going to a place that Steiner described, where the children only touch wood and natural fabric and natural stone, that the capacitance is conjugate. Their aura can breathe and unpack, and they can grow. So until we know why steel and aluminum are poisonous to every living thing, and you should not live in that structure, certainly the steel and aluminum don't belong in your kitchen or your bedroom, because your capacitance can't breathe through it. It's as simple as in Switzerland. You know, there's a hole in the roof in the old wooden structure where grandma's soul goes out when she dies. It points in the right direction, same as a pyramid. It's plasma projective. And you can't project your plasma through a structure made of steel and aluminum. Start with your dreaming. If your roof is made of metal, it inhibits your dreaming. Because a dream spell is a name for when cold plasma becomes centripetal.
So let me ask you something that's a little bit out there, and maybe you can shed some light if this is just a metaphor for something that could possibly be happening. But the moon, for instance, there are some researchers who say, and I've heard this from more than one person, that there are grays, and they point, and again, this could just be metaphor, but there's grays on the moon with a technology that's a soul-sucking type of technology. And you have two opposites here. You have the sun, you have the moon. And if we power the sun with our plasma or with our souls, for instance, what about the moon? Could the moon be, could there be some truth to the moon pulling our energy force in the opposite direction?
Well, Gurdjieff said correctly, coherent emotion feeds the sun, incoherent emotion feeds the moon. What he meant was that the moon is hollow and metal and opposite to a conjugator. So when the moon directly interferes with the Earth, when the moon gets between the Earth and the sun, not only the magnetic lines collapse and the water veins collapse, but the hospitals fill up. The physics is, because the moon is opposite to conjugate, it inhibits all of life. It's very simple. If you want a seed to grow, you must avoid the moon. And the NASA seismic data proved it was hollow and metal. We now know that it's an inhibitor for all of mind. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean it's evil. It means it's probably serving a function, although they say that the Andromedans offered to tow it away because it's parasitic. The fact is the moon stabilizes our orbit. But the physics is that electrical geometry is the key to whether the planet or the star or the planetoid, in the case of the moon, is inhabitable. And the practical result was that when Ingo Swann, who may have been the planet's best remote viewer, went to the dark side of the moon, he came back with the crap scared out of him.
I have heard stories about the dark side of the moon. What were some of his remote visions? Did he elaborate at all?
Well, basically, there's a book which is very hard to get, which he wrote about his Ingo Swann's book on his remote viewing. He was assigned by the military to check to see if the bad guys were there. And oh, yeah. But the thing is that the Greys and the Dracos, what we call the Nephilim or the fallen ones, they have to inhabit a non-implosive structure. That's the actual physics. And let's apply that to people. If your aura is implosive, which is to say you have a source of bliss, then by definition, that phase conjugate negentropy will spit out the parasites because it'll burn them, actually. So the physics is that when you have a source of bliss, that is the beginning of having your own source of charge. Until then, electrically, by definition, you are a parasite.
Now, the Anunnaki, at least according to Sitchin, and that's the stories that I'm most familiar with, they seemed, of course, advanced beings because they can travel throughout the galaxy, interplanetary at the very least. But they didn't, at least in Sitchin's work, they didn't seem to mention these type of frequencies as extensively when Anki created mankind, for instance. He created them in clay pots, and then he used genetic engineering, and he seemed to use very primitive type of resources and methods as opposed to what you're actually speaking about. Is that just because Zechariah Sitchin had a bad interpretation of what was going on and the Anunnaki really did utilize these type of technologies, or did they not quite grasp these understandings as we're grasping them right now?
Well, with what he had to work with, I think Sitchin did okay, but we've gone much past that. The clay pots were actually conjugating dielectrics. They made life, like water into wine, because they were implosive capacitance. And that's what these orgone accumulators are really. It's about the dielectric constant, actually. If the dielectric constant of the material is high enough, that capacitor, by definition, is cohering the zero-point energy. And so if you get the clay pot right, you can make life. But the more advanced, what we realize now is, you know, their gold powder, their gold mining operations was an indication of how primitive they were, not how advanced they were. Because now you can make the gold directly, and mostly gold in Egypt was made directly. And the fact that they had, the only way they got through the Van Allen belts was by nuking their way through, and that's very clear in the Sumerian, meant that they were not good navigators. And they nuked the Sinai Peninsula, the glass melt is still there, and they had to have the Syrian device, the Ark of the Covenant, to hold their nukes, because they were so crude, actually. So the physics is that, well, we need to learn the physics and dump the history. That's the lesson here. The Ark of the Covenant, for example, has a form of capacitance that reduces radioactivity measurably, and we desperately need to teach our electrical engineers why that works.
Now, I just want to clarify something. You said they nuked their way through the Van Allen radiation belt.
Yeah, because they were such lousy navigators.
Okay, was it the Van Allen belt or was it the asteroid belt? Because according to Sitchin's translations, from what I remember, it was the asteroid belt.
Yeah, probably true. Basically, that they had to carry their nukes. They had it needed. It's very in detail in this way. They had to carry enough nukes so they can get through, and then they had to hold them here. And that's one of the primary functions of the Ark of the Covenant, was to hold the nukes.
Ah, okay. I never really thought about it from that regard.
And that's why it killed the people that touched it.
Yeah,
right?
The voltage of the resulting implosive capacitance required the hygiene, which is described in the Bible, which is basically how you hold high voltage. And that was their weapon of war. And that same spark gap between the gold angels is actually a conjugate dielectric implosive fusion plasma. And that's how you make a gold atom stable in the monoatomic state, which is the gold powder mana ormes, the spice, which was the cash cow of the Essenes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so how does gold affect our bodies? I've heard a lot of people using gold to for health benefits. Is that just an urban legend, or is there some truth behind it?
I think Hermes correctly narrated a whole series of exercises to prevent fractionation of the personality from gold powder addiction. We have a whole bunch of articles about that. goldenmean.info/goldpowder. Now, Keshe has taken that to a whole new level with the evolution of monoatomics and cold plasma for propulsion, energy, and healing. And that's fractalfield.com/cold plasma, the new interviews and stuff. But basically, an atom is stable monoatomically when it's implosive and centripetal. And the only atoms that can do that well are the ones that are conjugators themselves, the noble gases and the platinum group metals. They do it best. Because the SPDF subshell, the completion called noble, the DF subshell electron completion is dodecicosa, and therefore fractal and implosive. And that's what makes it a conjugator, as in the noble gases and platinum group metals. So if you create the electrical conditions to be stable monatomically, you're fabricating charge implosion. And, you know, a monatomic gold atom, the Holy Communion, which is what it was called, the mana, causes implosion in the blood, and you hear your ears ringing. And if you do that out of context and mechanically, it's very dangerous, actually. But if it's done in context, organic ormes, for example, agricultural ormes derived from seawater, is very beneficial.
So what I'm getting from this conversation is that, and excuse me for being so layman's terms and basic with my explanation of this, but we're breaking into a type of understanding that Anki, first of all, used, and Anki wanted us to have, and he infused us with so much ability so we can obtain this kind of information, while on the other side, we have Enlil's clan, who is behind the religions, who has suppressed this type of information ever since the beginning of time, and we have two different factions fighting against each other. Anki wants to free us. Yahweh Enlil wants to enslave us. How long do you think this can keep going until somebody like Enlil, for instance, just decides, I'm going to take care of all of this and put a stop to this before we start seeing actual intervention by these beings, if they're still walking amongst us?
Yeah, well, it's probably a bit childish to consider it simply a battle between good and bad personalities. It's more of a discovery of the physics. That is really what it is. Because, you know, if you eat dead food, you badly need a parasite to eat the death out of your stomach. If you eat a dead idea, like God is outside your body, creation physics is outside your body, like an old-fashioned priest, then you need a parasite to eat that dead idea out of you, a priest. You know, it's a joke. But you see the point that yes. We do. There is a role for parasites here. So even when in dialogues with a vampire, they conclude that the largest parasite in the solar system, spelled Enkil, which is probably the Grim Reaper, is, you know, blocking your way through the heart of the sun. We probably still need that parasite also. So it's more a matter of discovering the physics, and blaming local personalities is a little bit childish.
I can understand that, definitely. But I do have to ask you this. When Anki first created us genetically engineered or altered us, let me say that, altered us, where were we in terms of our auras, for instance? Did we have auras? Did we have these, you know, other parts of us? Or were we basic animals, just like other animals here on Earth? Or let me ask you this question too. Maybe this is a better way to answer what I'm getting at. Do the animals around us have these intricate systems within them, the chakra systems, the auras, etc. as well? Or is that something that we were endowed with by Enki?
Well, the Sumerian is very clear. Enki selected the Takadama, or he selected the Cro-Magnon, the monkey, whatever you want to call him, specifically because when he looked at that particular monkey, it was the first time in his life he had ever seen a creature exhibit compassion. That's how he picked the monkey he was going to work with, because he saw these creatures exhibit compassion for other animals. He had never seen that before. That tells you something. No, we had something that he needed, and that was the ability to have this passion, the monkey blood. It translates, you know, the current joke about that is the highest percentage of Rh negative blood on the planet is UK, where, you know, we only hug our dogs and our horses, and we have a stiff upper lip. Joke. What that means is, you know, if your mother says don't cry, your upper lip stiffens. We know where that comes from. But if your mother is Elizabeth from Dragonborn, that's all the jokes. But the physics is that the Uru, remember, Ebi means bird, Uru means dragon blood. Ebi Uru, Hebrew, means crossing over. Any rabbi can tell you. So you had this crossing of the bloodlines, and there was something useful potentially came out of it. The dragon blood is where I got Kundalini from. I'm not saying, you know, Dracos are bad. I'm saying there was a part of that species that lost it, what we call Nephilim. The symptoms were clear: loss of long-term memory, loss of ability to take memory through death, loss of ability to lucid dream, loss of ability to plasma project. Basically, loss of implosion in DNA. Let's call it a Monsanto mistake. Seeing the science through all that is that we can become what they dreamed of being, which is lucid dreamers and plasma projectors and sending our auras through stars, if we understand the science. And it's not about, you know, there's evil people in our past. You know, that's childish. Yes, it's true. But the fact is that they have the same problem we do. Unless you get your aura through a star, you're toast.
When you say plasma projecting, are you referring to astral travel, to soul projecting?
I am referring to what in Egypt was called your ka, as in Catholic or Merkaba or Kaaba. Here's the electrical test to find out if the Pope is a Catholic. You measure his aura with the GDD bio-well.eu, and you find out if he has a ka.
Wow, fascinating. Hold right there. Quick bottom of the hour break. Final long segment right on the other side. I want to get into the Rh negative blood as well. Don't go anywhere. A few hundred thousand years we've been on this planet in the form that we are now, there's been quite a bit of consciousness evolution. And I can't help but wonder if this is something that is unique to us, or if it's something that's global or worldwide, or something planet Earth is actually going through. Because Daniel, you said something very interesting, that Anki saw compassion within the hominoid that was here before he created us, or altered the hominoid to create us. However, we're starting to see the same kind of compassion within the animal kingdom now. So I can't help but wonder if it's time for the entire Earth to shift. We become more godlike while the animals become more like we were prior to us being altered.
Yeah, well, let's remember the term divine means perfectly branched. So what we mean by being godlike means radiant for charge. And that it requires this condition called fractal or harmonic inclusive or conjugate. And so it boils down to the science of what we achieve with our hygiene. And there's a contrast here, because our ancestor, Draco Anunnaki, Nephilim, Uru, with their blood chemistry, nitrogen breathing, cyanogen exhaling, lipid, blood, carbon, bone, silicon nerve, they had higher wave propagation velocity in the nervous system, which meant higher frequencies in the EEG, which meant more telepathy. But without the low frequencies, they couldn't get the Schumann, the low frequencies of the planet. They couldn't get empathy, compassion, embedding. So that's why Enki had never seen compassion before, because it didn't actually fit their blood chemistry. And we achieve that when we enter resonant environments. So, for example, in steel and aluminum buildings, not only do you not hear the voices of your ancestors, but you're less likely to see compassion, because charge embedding is not even possible. Whereas in stone circles and, you know, nature environments, biologic materials, where the charge can breathe capacitively, you'll see more compassion. So it boils down to understanding the physics and choosing those kinds of environments.
What about our structures, the home structures that we have right now? It seems to be kind of artificial, cookie cutter type of things. It's not steel, it's not any of that, but it's a lot of plastics, some wood and the beams, but
most of it's plaster.
Yeah, most of it is plaster and garbage like that.
The real sin is the electrosmog. I mean, you get about three of those little transformers that power your computer and every single gadget you buy, and it absolutely measurably inhibits all digestion. In fact, it prevents human attention. So we have to understand what environment is required to have digestion and attention. And basically, it's conjugate, implosive, and centripetal. A practical example, if you remove the fluorescent lights in your kid's classroom and install sunlight, you measure a dramatic increase in attention span. It's because the physics of attention is a frequency recipe, let's call it, the truth frequency. And that frequency basically comes in the solar harmonics, which is hydrogen, which is implosive and conjugate. So you can make the frequencies that make environments centripetal, and that creates attention and bliss, etc. So it starts with removing the electrosmog and the steel and the aluminum, particularly from where you sleep and where you eat, and getting environments that can breathe charge. If the Schumann resonance cannot penetrate your home cannot breathe charge. And that's what's behind the earthing movement. Read the book Earthing, and it's beautiful, you know, barefoot in the mud and the rock, and your body gets access to the fractality called ground.
Right, right. I find myself doing that pretty regularly and just naturally. It was just something that just came to me. And when I do, I feel great. I really feel in touch. However, I do work around computers 24 hours a day, literally. I've got a whole studio here, broadcasting studio. My job requires me to be on the computer most of the day. And I usually fall asleep watching some kind of documentary or something like that. So how can we in our modern society now get away from these while at the same time still operating within the electronic matrix that we've created for ourselves?
Well, I mean, one practical thing, you know, use a portable and charge it when you're away. And while you're using that portable, it's unplugged. And that's a practical thing. And always have your feet touching that has something, you know, real stone, real wood that goes to real ground. And, you know, medically, we know the disease incident above the third floor of buildings is much higher because your access to ground in Schumann.
Ah, okay. We are lucky in the sense that now we moved into a home that's 100 years old, literally. And so
it's mostly wood.
It's mostly wood. It's
wonderful.
Made of some very, very old material. There's a lot of history here, too. Mm-hmm. And you can just feel it in the air around this particular home. There's been a lot that's gone on here, both positive and negative. But we do feel it fully charged.
A lot of love, too.
Well, that's great. That's wonderful. But another big danger here is during the cold season, the air loses capacitance. You know, even the Arabs now are willing to pay to avoid air conditioning because the metal fins deplete the capacitance of the air, as does your heating. So when the air loses capacitance, you begin to yawn because you lose oxygen solubility. And that's the issue, losing charge density, which is what holds oxygen in solution. So living charged fresh air is so essential to having an aura.
You know, that's right. We don't really have any kind of heating or air conditioning system in this house, but it feels perfectly fine most of the time. But I've noticed I feel a lot more energized here than in places where we've had air conditioning.
Let me ask you this. How does water play into this?
Well, water stores capacitance first. But I'd like to finish that thought just briefly about the heating system. The thing is that forms of heat are on a scale from fractionating to fractal. For example, solar heat, the direct solar emanence is conjugate and therefore is a wonderful form of heat, whereas a microwave oven is the worst form of heat because it's most fractionating, whereas wood is sort of in between, it's fairly good, et cetera, et cetera. So there's heat that's more fractal and less. Electric stoves are more fractionating than a wood stove. A gas stove is a little better than an electric stove, et cetera. So on that scale is why you pay more for a pizza that's been cooked in a wood flame, basically. So fractionation versus fractality applies to heat, it applies to cooling, and it applies to water. And that's what we've done at theimploder.com, is we found a way to restore fractality, which is to say implosive centripetal conjugation, to water. Theimploder.com, very, very effective. We have 68% proven increase in marijuana production, but we do, you know, all the vegetables, et cetera, et cetera. So by restoring that centripetal force, which is called laminar coherence or fractality, to water, you create life force.
Wow. And I can see how that would be possible in any real circumstance. I mean, because we noticed in a drier climate, we were not only more physically uncomfortable, but it felt like you couldn't think as clearly. There was no, you know, I hate to talk about our relationship, but it felt like there wasn't that same melding together as there was before.
Yeah, we talk about permission to touch being a feminine principle, but in fact, permission to touch is determined by whether your auras can merge. And auras can't merge if capacitance propagation is inhibited. It's the definition of sacred space. So when the air is too dry, for example, the capacitance of your aura cannot unpack efficiently. So it's literally about charge propagation efficiency. And that in electronic biology and cancer is the definition of a cancer preventing blood, the triplet state electron. And in the air, it's the critical level of moisture that allows capacitance to flow between bodies. It's literally permission to touch. There's an old story about that, football occurs among young boys when permission to touch is inhibited. So they break each other's bones instead, you know. So This will be an ad now for the National Football League. Are they one of your paid advertisers?
Not at all.
Not at all.
Oh, good. Okay, well, in that case, we can continue. So the poison pellet called a football is the anal whatever that has to be pushed out because urge to touch frustrated becomes anger by definition, which is this poison pellet, literally the football. So if young boys get permission to touch, you know, coming of age in Samoa and the origin of the feminine wet making touch permissive cultures, then football is not necessary. Amazing.
Wow. And see, that makes a lot of sense too, because it explains the adolescent angst that comes along with this whole idea behind the abstinence education programs and
all
keeping
this crap about, yeah, which is actually fear of touch. I mean, the joke would be the obscene paychecks football players get reaches a peak in British cultures where permission to touch is absolutely forbidden. And because the culture hasn't learned how to distribute their charge, basically. So I started studying the extraterrestrial history specifically at that point where I realized that the history of the planet is a history of fear of women. Ooh. So I needed to figure out where fear of women came from. And I realized that is E.T., actually, because when the Draco Anunnaki Enki's father's family flew away from Pleiades, specifically because the female dominated culture was attacking.
And
actually, even then, when they arrived at Earth, you know, when Enlil Yahweh said, "You are the chosen," what he meant was, we need to control who replicates, because in their definition of DNA that is defective is DNA that changes. And you need to understand the history here. That philosophy is the origin of sex guilt and the caste system in India and Aboriginal marriage law, that DNA that changes is defective. And the reason they had that mistaken idea, which I'm going to call the Monsanto mistake, was because their genetic required radioactivity for charge transport, like the Brown nuclear battery. And they grew up in a radioactive environment. Practical example on Earth is the Aradia couple in Russia grew up too close to Chernobyl. Read about it in Alien Blood Chemistry at fractalfield.com/negentropic fields. Point being that using radioactivity for electron transport meant that they had a higher likelihood of genetic mutation. So therefore, they had to write down the genetic records, read the copper scrolls or the Mormons, etched in on the copper with the plasma residues of sacred alphabets, Akkadian, which Joseph Smith was studying when he interpreted the Urim and Thummim. So that was because they were trying to prevent DNA from changing, which is the origin of sex guilt.
Oh, wow. Wow. And then this ties in with the Rh negative thing, which they, the elite, apparently all have Rh negative blood or something like that, and they think that they're better than everybody else. But I've also heard that a lot of the people that are listeners of our show, as well as us, we're Rh negative. So I really don't know what to think about this. Can you help explain?
It's a bit of a superficial cliche, but rhesus monkey absent, which is what Rh negative means the monkey blood is not as present. Now, what you need to know is that the reptilian, the Draco, the Uru, as in Europe, Ural, and Uru Asa, which Antiparks call ages of Uras, the reptilian blood was genetically recessive, required inbreeding. And that's how they kept some of their plasmamorph called shapeshift capabilities, et cetera. But whereas the monkey blood was dominant, and that's why Rh negative blood is recessive on the planet today, actually. But the monkey had the passion, but the Uru blood had certain qualities we needed. We're not saying the red, you know, David Icke only had half of this right. You know, and Lawrence Gardner, he says the Dracos are the heroes of history. But if you take the merging of the two, you see, well, both sides of the blood needed each other. Mm-hmm. But it's true. The reptilian blood was recessive, and the Rh negative then is touch inhibiting. You know, we only hug our dogs and our horses. Thank you very much.
Well, exactly. You know, and I think that you have to have both elements, the masculine, which seems to be the more Draco reptilian kind of aspect, and then you have the feminine, which is the more, you know, rhesus monkey aspect, that shows the compassion and the empathy and the love and understanding. And then you've got the reptilian aspect that is able to see in all these different dimensions at the same time, and it uses the neocortex to really plow through what all this means.
Well, I mean, if you wanted to look at the history for context, the Anunnaki dragon queens called the Mag, as in Migdal, to tower Magdalen. The dragon queens were a female dominated culture only because the ancestors of the Draco called the Archon or the Siakar, that originally was an androgynous species. If there's a French book about that. When they mutated to become asexual, the females naturally they were biologically dominated, and they were more telepathic. And the conflict became so great that, and Anton Parks describes clearly, the male and female cultures had a separate language, which inhibited communication between them, which is true of Aboriginal culture today. They must have a separate language called Amanita and Emesa, our origin of our term emanate. And this is the difference between Akkadian and Babylonian. It's actually worked out in the languages of this planet. It's the male versus the female language. The female language was more telepathic. The male language, it's exhibited in the physics of Kundalini. A male can have a different kind of Kundalini, which is more plasma projective, but at greater risk to his own immortality. Whereas a female, because your mother's mother's egg was fractal hole inside her mother's mother's mother, there's less risk to immortality, but the Kundalini is less plasma projective. But you get this whole phenomenon of virgin birth, etc. So the natural tendency biologically for the females to be dominant was so evident in that ancient culture that when Enki's family, Anu, arrived on Earth, they were afraid of women. And that's the beginning of the story of Earth.
Wow. And so no wonder the feminine is so devalued in our traditional societal structures. We were doomed from the get-go. It's like the divine feminine is so ingrained in the planet, and yet the people that or the beings that created us programmed us to be the opposite. And so for the last several thousand years, we've kind of been trying to come to terms with both aspects that are fighting against each other.
Well, you know, if we say that the female is more fractal, there is one thing to recognize, though, is that the female-dominated cultures in that history, the old Draco, were more perverse than today's male-dominated culture. Whereas if we look at coming of age in Samoa and the female-dominated cultures of recent anthropology, we see they were always cultures in wet climates.
And
there's a physics there, because when you restore fractality, you restore precipitation, permission to touch for waves. So basically, when we learn the symmetry, which allows waves to touch non-destructively, which is rainmaking and the physics of creating bliss and even love, which is perfect embedding, you actually create the conditions for the unpacking of the feminine principle.
Wow. And so that makes sense why rainforest cultures and equatorial cultures are more female driven, it seems.
Yeah. James DeMeo's famous paper in the Oregon literature called Desertification and Patriarchy is specifically the physics proving that the spread of patriarchy can be proven to cause the spread of deserts. It's very simple, because water vapor cannot form a droplet except in a touch permissive environment, which is to say, the seed of rainmaking is the fractality of charge.
Wow.
Which is why children, you know, a healthy child standing barefoot in the mud is very able to put a hole in the cloud, which is the same with an orgone tube. The physics is that centripetal capacitance, which is you know, what mind is. It's why focused human attention reduces radioactivity measurably in addition to compressing charge, as Tiller proved. That the reason there's a hole in the cloud is because the charge has come to focus. And that's precipitation in physics and magic.
Wow. And when you were mentioning the patriarchy having to do with the desertification, that goes along with Terence McKenna's theory that the desertification and the, you know, basically the rainforest turning into plains and all of that. And then after that happened, then it started to dry up and the mushrooms went away. And then once the mushrooms went away, the feminine oriented culture started to die out and turn into a patriarchal mead culture.
We should, yeah, that's very nice to talk about it that way. We should apply it to the present as well. In Brazil, just after they cut down the rainforest, now they have this world famous drought in Brazil and their hydroelectric power now is gone. Mm-hmm. And it's because of patriarchy, actually. And to restore that, they would actually have to make the magnetic lines knit back together in a rose-like fractal and reattract the rain, which is to say to reattract the feminine.
And this gets into the rain dances of the Native Americans and how they would dress up, you know, in a feminine fashion pretty much and dance around and would actually create rainfall from energy.
Rolling Thunder was interviewed about how he made rain. He said he was tickling the underside of the belly of a certain black beetle, not unlike the Egyptian scarab. Now, which is Elizabeth Hayes's son waking up staring into the black beetle and saying, suddenly I remember my past lives. But the reason is because the electrical geometry of the wiring of that black beetle was very fractal. So he was tickling the heart of the fractal. Now, if you look at how Kundalini causes rain, we think about Tutankhamun, who was really the biggest part of the Jesus myth. You have 100 generations of pharaohs realizing they would get fired from their job if they could not make rain. It was the primary function of the pharaoh. And if you had a drought, they immediately knew the pharaoh was not God, which is why you fire the pharaoh if you have a drought. So suddenly, after 100 generations of that, they find out that Tutankhamun's blood can make rain. That's called the willed mutation of the species, the yearning of the ancestors,
Wow.
Wow. So it's basically self-imposed mutation that you just will into existence?
Well, yeah, but the physiology of Kundalini, it being a rainmaker, which is where you go, you know, in bliss process, is that the massive conjugate sacrocranial physics of Kundalini, goldenmean.info/Kundalini, we wrote up the Bentoff physics there as well, creates this massive centripetal field, what in Iceland for Kundalini is called the great masts of God, why you would see the field at a distance. It's massively centripetal, and it's a rainmaker. And we've had that experience, and that gets into Ophanum ritual, what D.N. Kelly did to take out the Spanish Armada with that storm whose meteorology was unprecedented in history, and the origin of Shakespeare, who studied under D.N. Kelly, wrote The Tempest.
Oh, wow. I mean, did you know, the Spanish actually saw that as a sign from God that they should just give up and stop, trying to fight the English altogether. They just gave up after that point.
We actually know the hills that D.N. Kelly went to, seven hills and five hills around Prague, to fabricate that storm. And we know what he did and why.
Wow. Oh, man, we're going to have to talk about this next time whenever we have you back on. We only have a few minutes left of the broadcast. Is there anything you'd like to leave the audience with?
Well, I would suggest that we learn that the aura is cold plasma, fractalfield.com/cold plasma, and that you can do the hygiene to have the bliss. And it boils down to doing the yoga, eating the live food, and getting to a place of charge so that your aura itself can become centripetal. It's very practical. And I would suggest read my book. Franklinfield.com.
There are quite a bit of books of yours that I need to read, because the information that you go into, I didn't even know. And of course, in this 2 hours that we've had you on, we couldn't even scratch the surface. Mm-hmm. So I'm really looking forward to diving headfirst into those. Give us the websites one more time, please. And which one of your books would you recommend that people begin with?
Fractalfield.com at the top is my newest book, and that's really the focus on the science. Okay. GoldenMean.info/consciouskids has the early book, which is on the science of how you teach kids the biologic necessity for bliss process and the hygiene. So those are the two main, although there's four or five out there. And TheImploder.com is a water treatment for agriculture and life force, hydration and growth, and for people. And finally, HeartsRing.com is the iPhone app for yogic breath control, empathy training, and heart coherence training. Very inexpensive, only $19. And look soon for our rejuvenation field device you can read about in the book, fractalfield.com, where we apply this to the youthing time reversal for people.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you so much for your time this evening. It has been absolutely fascinating, and I'm definitely looking forward to doing it again in the near future.
Thank you. Thank you. And I enjoyed our conversation about the feminine. Thank you, dear.
Oh, we love talking to you, Dan, every time. It's amazing.
Thank you so much.
Have a great evening. What time is it over there, by the way?
It's 6:54 a.m.
Uh-oh.
Oh,
Are you about to go to sleep, or are you up for the day?
I actually often wake up early. I'm doing okay. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Good deal.
I was worried about that.
Me too.
Have a great evening. Take care. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for tuning in this evening. Fascinating, fascinating show with Daniel Winter. And stay tuned. We've got much more coming up right here on truthfrequencyradio.com. And I just want to take a moment just to say thank you to all of the members. I want to try to make it a point to say it, more often than we do. But thank you so much, because you're really propelling the station into remarkable, remarkable places. And it has been an incredible, incredible journey. So kiss the one you love right now. You never know the last time is going to be. We'll see you next weekend.
See you next week, guys. Love ya.
Amongst the vultures, now you're under control. Could you do what they told you? The front lines now.